And my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I had got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Don't wanna be a richer man.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Changes. It's gonna have to be a different man.
All right, welcome back to a Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, your thoughts about the music again?
Well, the music, lyrics speak for themselves. Times are changing. It's a selection of various melodies that reflect how I felt last night about Can't Have a Beauty and about things going a new direction.
So, Sandy, let's talk about the VP options for the vice president and presidential nominee Kamala Harris. One thing that's certain, she's in a position and there is going to be another younger person that she is going to have running along with her. And you know, this certainly, Sandy, with all of the conversations about people didn't have a choice, it had to be the lesser of two evils. I didn't want Biden. He was too old. Trump was too old. And there were people, Generation Zs and Xers and millennials. Hey, they're too old. I'm not voting. These people are too old. Here's an opportunity for Kamala to pick another younger person. Many of these gubernatorial guys and women are still very young people.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that the selection, the choices that she has demonstrate the deep bench of capable people that there are out there in the next generation of Democrats. I mean, the people being looked at, Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, a very important swing state, and a guy who's apparently very popular, Pete Buttigieg, who's extremely articulate. People have watched him perform over the past couple of years very competently. Andy Beshear, a Democratic governor in Kentucky, normally red.
Of all places, right?
A very capable, well-liked guy. J.B. Pritzker, Illinois. Roy Cooper, Democratic governor of
North Carolina.
And he's won six statewide elections in North Carolina, so he's demonstrated his capacity. Mark Kelly, the senator from Arizona, obviously a very important state as well. And Mark Kelly's a guy with a great deal of charisma, married to Gabby Gifford, who we all know about. So, I mean, I think she's got some really good talent to look to. All of them are going to be of her generation. It's, like you said, it's not going to be the lesser of two evils anymore. There's going to be some actual choices, and at least one choice, I think, won't look to people like they have to hold their nose while they vote.
You know, Sandy, it just, for all the world, you know, I have been saying that, you know, the Democrats, you know, were not looking to the youngers people and giving them an opportunity and a chance. And even though you knew these people were on the periphery, Sandy, as long as Biden was the president, you didn't hear much about them. Certainly in the circles of where they are and other places, you heard about these people. You heard about Gavin Newsom, you know, and so that's who you would hear about. you didn't hear much about all of these other governors that were doing great things.
The Democratic bench is deeper than these. These are the people who I think are ready and willing to step forward as vice president. Gavin Newsom is the governor of a very big state and has a lot to be done there. And Gretchen Whitmer, who's been highly regarded, has expressed the fact that she's not interested. So, but it's a deep bench, you know, and I think that's, again, a breath of fresh air.
Well, and the difference is now we're going to hear from that deep bench more and more. Mike from Kenosha, good morning to you, sir. You say what?
Hey, real quick. Yeah, I just wanted to throw in there, you know, my uncle had Alzheimer's, and he was really the last one to figure it out. You know, we could all see it slowly begin to take over. And, you know, within a few months, you know, there was some subtle but distinct changes that we all saw. That's how this disease works. And, you know, I'm kind of a little bit more apathetic when it comes to people in illnesses. You know, I don't think, you know, Biden's at anywhere near, you know, debilitated. I think we're just seeing, you know, some of the signs, the early signs of this stuff. And it's the smart thing and the right thing to do. You know, things change in 6 months. So I don't think this was a conspiracy. I don't think this was a plan. I think what we are seeing here is a gentleman and a group of people that are putting the country first, that are recognizing reality, and they're doing the right thing. Things change when it comes to Alzheimer's and mental capacity monthly. So I think, you know, again, I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. This is the sign of a healthy republic, you know, when they can be open-minded and can pivot. And finally, again, we have a little over 100 days before the election. It's plenty of time to, you know, communicate the platform and to rally the troops, if you will. Yeah, matter of fact, I don't think we should have ongoing elections, perennial. So a 100-day term is just fine with me. So
hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call.
Well, actually, I think the 100-day term is actually, I think what happens with these perpetual elections is that people turn off, okay? It's like when you're told to do something 100 times, on the 100th time you're told it, you're not listening anymore. And I think that elections that go on forever end up creating a bunch of people who are basically ignoring what's going on. And I think, therefore, that what's going to happen here is that 100 days is the time in which you can receive new information, become enthusiastic about that new information, analyze it, and just make decisions. And I think that it's going to be an advantage, quite frankly, because I think that there's going to be a willingness. The body politic has an attention span problem. And I think that 100 days is right at the outside of what that attention span can be. And I think that this is going to be an advantage for the Democratic Party.
So Sandy, during this period of time, while the Democrats are going to be soaking up all of the news media and or most of it, and the Republicans and Donald Trump are going to be struggling to get coverage, he's going to become more and more unhinged. It's pretty safe to say that's going to be his response.
Well, that's, I think last week what I said was predicted was that because the Democratic Party with a new candidate would attract so much natural attention, they would get hundreds of millions of dollars of unpaid for free public relations based on the news need to cover these new candidates, their ideas, et cetera, that Donald Trump would have to do cartwheels, okay? And when Donald Trump does cartwheels to get attention, it's not pretty. And I don't mean physical cartwheels, but physically it wouldn't be pretty either. But no, it's going to be, I think the probability is that he will have to become more outrageous and more notorious.
All right. You conjured him up, Sandy. CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I wasn't able to hear the show for a while. I was in a meeting, but I have seen the coronation, probably for the most unqualified vice president and president, border czar, do nothing.
Well, before you go any further, what makes her unqualified?
What makes her unqualified? Because she's never done anything. She's put in place as the border czar and record numbers. So you gentlemen want to make this about personality. If you don't want to make it about policy. You don't want to make it about qualifications. Right?
No, actually, quite the contrary. I think that what's going to happen is we're going to shift from this personality battle between two old men, and we're now going to have alternatives, and people are actually going to be listening to what policies and what platform it is that she brings forward. She was elected twice in statewide elections in the biggest state in the country, and, you know, I think we have yet to find out all of the qualifications, but I think that it's probably a very worrisome proposition for the Republicans, because I think that there will be a great deal of attention paid, and I think there will be a substantial opportunity for the Democratic Party and the candidate for the Democratic Party to present the policies, and then we can have a conversation about policies, and then we can have a conversation about competence. I think it's premature to reach a judgment, and I'm interested in how it is that you could already have reached a conclusion that this is the least qualified person, based on what, public service? Because, of course, Donald Trump was totally unqualified in that basis prior to his election as president.
Go ahead, CJ.
He kept us safe and prosperous for 4 years until COVID, and more people have died under Biden than Trump did, of course.
Biden is not the candidate.
I think we don't have to talk about accomplishments. Vice presidents don't accomplish much. What were Mike Pence's accomplishments? But I think what we're going to find out is what kind of a candidate she is and what kind of policies and platform are presented. And then we can have this conversation about what it is we think about it. But until then, I think it's probably premature.
All right. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host Sandy Williams and you, Sandy, the music.
Yeah, I picked the music for How I Felt. Bright sunshiny day. I hadn't actually heard the Gladys Knight version of that before. I liked it when I heard it. So
all right, let's go to John from Boaz. Good morning to you, John. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Good morning. I want to congratulate you once again for your federal interview with the President of the United States of America. That's a very good accomplishment.
Well, thank you.
You know. Yes, you know that. Everybody's telling you because you know that's the truth. See, the thing is with her is She is in the right spot at the right time, and I call that the fate, F-A-T-E. Her fate is, in other words, her stars are lining up, if you're an astrologer. Look at what they did to Galileo. Look at what they're doing to Sandy. Look at what they're doing to Earl Ingram.
Hey, John. So you go from Galileo to Sandy and Earl Ingram. Well, that's pretty good.
He's talking about astrological
science. I know what he's talking about. That.
I'm a Virgo myself. How about you?
I'm a Gemini.
Yeah.
But John, thank you very much for the call, man. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Mark. Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, good morning to you, Bill. You say what?
Well, you're a Gemini with a Riviera, right? and Sandy, you and Earl deserve a 5-star, what would you call it? Citizens of Wisconsin and the country award for getting the truth out. But let me cut to the chase real fast. I think Kamala has hit the ground so fast, the Republicans' heads are spinning. They aren't even caught up, and she's raised over $1 million in a 48-hour period.
$100 million.
$100 million.
What is going to stop this
thing? Bill.
You're right. $100 million. But let me just finish. What is going to stop this lady? Absolutely nothing. I'm just telling you, as I'm telling my Republicans friends, there's a new sheriff in town, and she has no use for criminals.
Hey, Bill, always good stuff, man. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Mark from the Prairie du Sac. Hey, good morning to you, Mark. Your thoughts?
Yeah, good morning. I think what we're going up against now, and this is a meme I've been working out in my head and discussing, that I think this is a reworking of the Confederate ideology in 2025 that we're up against now, with 2025 and Agenda 47. And one of the things I picked up from a book on the Confederate Nation is a writing by George Fitzhugh who posited that the original revolution was wrongheaded, and it was okay in its aims, but it was wrongheaded in what spawned it. And he was maintaining that the Civil War, as I see Project 2025 and Agenda 47, is a reaction and to the Reformation that we saw in the original revolution, and they see that this gains we've made today, I think that this is a protest against the I see 2025 as a doctrine, a protest against the doctrines of natural liberty, human equality, and the social contract, as talked by some of the thinkers of the time, including Locke, who preceded that, but Adam Smith, Benjamin Franklin, Tom Paine, and he went on to say the rest of the infidel political economists who maintain the world is too much governed, because I think these guys think the world is too little governed in terms of human freedom. I think it's too much governed in terms of regulations that we have, but they really object to the fact that we are striving and getting closer and closer to a more perfect union, and getting closer to more human equality in our society rather than less is what they want to have. I mean, I can fully see these guys, that say, well, slavery wasn't all that bad an idea. The Romans had it, the ancient Greeks had it, the Egyptians had it, and look how how successful they were.
Hey, Mark, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to
Kind of deep stuff, but I do think that Project 2025 is an effort on the part of a bunch of sort of right-wing policy wonks to try and refight the battle that went on with the Founding Fathers over what the Constitution would have and how the government would run. And it's going all the way back to that, and that's why they talk about it being a war, because I think they perceive that they really want to... They criticize the left for not exalting the United States, but Project 2025... is an assault on what the United States is right now, and it's a demonstration of how unhappy they are with what it is that exists in our country and how our country operates, and they want to reestablish the rules of operation to put much more power in the hands of essentially landowners. That was the battle at the time of the founding fathers. That's how it was talked about. The difference between people of means and those without. Landowning was the definition of people with means. That fight is ongoing again, and it's being done in the cloakroom.
So let me do this. Guys, hang on the phone lines. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea.
You know that brass, you know, coming in behind? Yeah. Oh, man. It doesn't get any better than that, does it?
This is Kamala singing this morning.
Welcome back to Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us if that's in them. You know, you got a pretty wide range of music, my friend.
Well, you know, I throw a dart up on the wall.
All right. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to Tom from West Dallas. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I am just very curious with your conservative callers, if you can call them that, your mega callers, talking about what experiences Kamala have, what experience did Trump have? I mean, all he did was bankrupt businesses. I know he had no political experience at all. And look what he did. I mean, he never built a wall. He never lowered drug prices. He didn't decrease the deficit. He didn't drain the swamp. He didn't make COVID disappear. The only thing he did, other than he basically, he hates who you hate or who they hate. And sadly, that is what everyone thinks you need. They think they need is just to hate. He has no platform. He has no experience. It's just all about Trump. And his, words stop coming to me.
Well, let me plug some in for you. I think that Trump is an opportunist who will do whatever it takes to have aggrandized power You know, so he appointed Supreme Court justices at the will of others, and that's about all that he accomplished. And then there was a tax reduction, which of course Republican Congresses always want to adopt. But other than that, the accomplishments or the platform or the ideological policies are very hard to discern.
Tom?
Agreed.
Yeah. All right, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
Hi, good morning. Sandy, I totally agree with you about Project 2025. I've been reading about the era of the beginning of the country. I read about Hamilton and other presidents of that time. And there was a struggle, a big struggle. And that struggle continues where the haves want to have all the power and they want the have-nots to remain socially
subservient
on the have.
Right.
Yes. And I think it's about time that this finally will come to rest. I've been reading the Federalist Papers, and I've been reading about what Hamilton had to say and John Jay and Madison. And it is really clear cut that they were at one time, and although Madison changed over, were for the people. And they explained it thoroughly why the Constitution was set up the way that it was set up. And I think that people have to come down and actually from wherever they are and actually reread the Constitution, reread the Federalist Papers, and then you will get an idea of who you need to vote for. I don't want to tell people who to vote for. That's their decision. But for the sake of our country, for the sake of our Constitution, for the sake of our rule of law, and for the sake of our freedom, we must actually vote blue. But like I say, people need to read the Constitution, they need to read the Federalist Papers again, and really get an idea of what this country stands for.
Hey, Susan, thank you. Thank you very much, as always. Let's go to Robert from West Dallas. Good morning to you, Robert. You say what?
Good morning. Yeah, there were a lot of terrible things, you know, putting kids in cages, ballooning the national debt, stacking the judiciary with a bunch of people that are unqualified, according to the Bar Association. The one good thing that happened in 4 years under the Trump administration is I believe they gave leave, maternity leave or extended leave benefits to federal employees. And I don't even think that was Trump's idea. I think that was something Ivanka was pushing. Other than that, I really struggle to find any accomplishments in 4 years that were productive and actually helped the average person.
You know, Robert, and it's not just what he did with those first 4 years. It's what his plans are for the second 4 years that should terrify everybody, right?
Absolutely. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you very much for the call. Sandy?
Yeah, there's one other. He had hospitals posting their prices. Although what happened was the rule was promulgated, but it was never enforced, so it didn't really happen. But there was a rule that would have been and could be helpful to consumers of medical care, which is that required the publication and posting of hospital prices. And these are the kind of things that actually the Biden administration has now been pushing.
But, you know, Sandy, you can talk about, again, those 4 years. We have a measuring stick of what Donald Trump has done.
Well, actually, I would, you know, one of the things that his backers would tout would be the tax decrease. I would attack the tax decrease as being a substantial problem that was created by the administration, by his administration. It increased the deficit substantially, and it created a tax process which, when those tax decreases expire for the middle class America in 2025, is going to create even more disparity in income. But the tax reduction itself enhanced and exacerbated the extreme divergence in wealth in our country.
All right, let's go back to Brendan from New Jersey. Brendan?
I just want to disagree. I think that Trump is really qualified to be a carnival barker, frequent flyer on the Epstein jet, a tax evader, a reality show host, and the puppet behind Project 2025. So, CJ, I'm right there with you.
Brendan, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Let me ask you, Sandy, again. At the root of all of it is what policies is Trump going to be, you know, talking about? What policies are he, you know, have you heard him talking about coming if he's reelected? What have you heard him talk about?
Well, I think what's going to be most important is the policies that Kamala talks about. You can't force the other side to talk about policies if that's not what they want to do. But I think what the American public wants to think about is, what is it that you want to do in your administration? What is your administration going to accomplish that's going to affect me, Tom, Dick, and Mary, and how? And my hope is that this switch that's been turned by Joe Biden by selflessly getting out of the election process and introducing a new face and a new generation is going to cause a refocus, not on personalities, but on policy. And, you know, well, I don't think Donald Trump is capable of focusing on policy, but I do think that that Kamala Harris will, and I think that will be the difference.
All right, let's go to David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
All right, thanks, Earl. And Sandy, I got to agree with Sandy. A couple of minutes ago, he was talking about the national debt under Trump. And when you think about it in terms of that climate change has been known about since, well, it's been discussed since the 1970s. And I guess it was 1962 when Rachel Carson wrote her book, Silent Spring. So the world, the science world has known that we're going to really need to spend money a whole different way. And the fact that Donald Trump and his polluter buddies don't want to admit that they caused the problem, so they can't afford to have research, they can't afford to have cleanup, because by having cleanup, they're admitting that there was a problem. By discussing how the spill got there, it gets into lawsuits. And so their purpose has been to deny climate change based upon they don't want to admit that they were the poisoners. And so the idea of cost overruns in the budget, it's based upon the idea that they always put together a crap budget, or currently they don't even put together a budget at all. And they still call themselves conservatives, but they, you know, this Congress under, whether it was under McCarthy or now under, who's the
Johnson.
Current Mike Johnson. Yeah, I mean, those guys, they still haven't put together a budget. They get like $10,000 a month as in salary, and they don't do their job. You know, if they had worked for McDonald's and didn't do their job, they would have been fired in a week. And the idea that these guys, their purpose in the Constitution is to build a budget, and they've come up with every excuse why they can't do a budget, and then they go into emergency spending because of it.
Hey, David, well said. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy?
Well, Project 2025 on global warming is a particularly fascinating object for study, because what is said repeatedly in the book is, or the compendium, is that what ought to happen, according to the writers of it, is that we ought to leave the problems created by global warming to future generations and the ingenuity and the marketplace of future generations. Basically, what they're saying is we need to prosper today at the expense of tomorrow. We need to kick this problem to our grandchildren and great-grandchildren, which is exactly the opposite of stewardship, right? I think stewardship, the notion is we're going to leave this place better for our children and grandchildren. We're not going to kick the problems to them and let their ingenuity, bless their hearts, solve the problem. And so it's a particularly cynical portion of the strategy that's described. And in the process of also the rest of that strategy associated with global warming is to eliminate all government analysis, study, scientific study, because I guess it's a bit like the more you test, the more COVID you find. the more you analyze and study scientifically this question of global warming, the more you might find that human conduct is playing a role that could possibly be mitigated.
You know, Sandy, it is without question Project 2025 and the fact that Donald Trump has been working diligently to separate himself from it. He really can't separate himself from it, and because his plans are to govern according to it.
Yes, I mean, it's only politically expedient to try and put distance between him and that now, but after he was elected, I can assure you, first of all, it reads, many parts of it read like he wrote it. Getting rid of the 10-year term for the FBI director and making him serve at the pleasure of the president, you don't think Donald Trump would like to do that? Making sure that the Justice Department can bring no prosecutions without the White House favor. Do you think Donald Trump wants to control the Department of Justice? He's already stated that he does. All sorts of parts of it are exactly what Donald Trump has talked about, wished for, and most of it is written by people who were in the Trump administration.
Well, you know, Sandy, the education portion of it is kind of what I want to discuss before we get out of here. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays is my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you.
And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know?
Welcome to what is the last few minutes of the Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show with my co-host, Sandy Williams. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You want to talk about somebody who was, you know, Sandy, kind of forced out.
Yeah. This is what getting forced out looks like. Apparently, Ms. Cheadle, the head of the Secret Service, resigned today, but her resignation was called for by both Raskin,
Democrat
and Republican. And, you know, I guess clearly there was an accountability problem and a problem with respect to the operation of the Secret Service at Trump's rally. And I think this is probably the right thing to happen. But this is what getting forced out looks like. It's not the Joe Biden decision type process.
Let's go to Bob from Waukesha. Good morning to you, Bob. You say what?
Good morning to you, Earl. Last night I never watched a station, but I was watching MSNBC because they were going to do a Project 25, let people know about it. But in the midst of Biden stepping down and Harris stepping in, they had a roundtable discussion. And according to them, they have heard that the Trump administration is having buyer's remorse about J.D. Vance. And the only reason he went with J.D. Vance is he took
words of wisdom from Tucker Carlson and Don Jr. Now, that's like me going into a bar.
It's an oxymoron, it sounds like to me, yeah.
It's like me going into a bar, and there's this drunk at the end of the bar, starts talking politics with me. That because of, you probably know this, Stance, J.D. Dance's stance on abortion is no exception for rape or incest. And if you're a woman living in a domestic abuse household, you should stick it out. So they're going to have a real problem, hopefully, with women, especially with Vance on the ticket.
Well, you know, thank you very much for the call, Bob. You know, he is a wrecking ball, right? I mean, he doesn't have any tact, right?
J.D. Vance, I think he's just undoubtedly an intelligent guy, but he was clearly selected because he was viewed as sort of a more intelligent and articulate mini-me of Donald Trump. He was willing to assume that role, and that was the role he's going to play, which is sort of the attack machine. If to the extent that Donald Trump isn't an attack machine, J.D. Vance was going to be a more articulate version of that. And he also, however, has this baggage. You know, he's stated his positions. Some of them involved his how despicable he thought Donald Trump was in the past, but as well his positions with respect to women's health. And that's going to be a problem.
You know, Sandy, we can, or they can constantly talk about the side of this equation with Kamala and Democrats. But, you know, even with Donald Trump at the height of his popularity with a certain segment of the population, you're still talking 40%, 45%.
No, I mean, Donald Trump does, and J.D. Vance articulated in his book, a very good book, Hillbilly Elegy, very well articulated the problem of the disaffected middle class blue collar workers in America, and you know, the Democratic Party needs to pay attention to that. I think Kamala Harris will. I think, quite frankly, that the policies of the Democratic Party, the Biden administration,
they were addressing that.
Were addressing that. I don't think there were any policies of the Trump administration that addressed it, other than giving lip service to it and fanning the flames of it from a cultural war standpoint. So, you know, the Trump administration understands the problem, and J.D. Vance understands this undercurrent that is being experienced by, in particular, white middle-class blue-collar America. But they didn't respond to it with helpful policies. They responded to it with arguments and polemics that fanned the flames of anger. And I think it's the Democratic Party that these people will start listening to about policy.
So, Sandy, how do they possibly, with the independents and that 15%, 20% who has been undecided, what can the Republicans do differently now to try to gain, you know, leverage over those independents?
Well, what I can hope for is that both parties would start addressing the needs of Tom, Dick, and Mary. And if the Republican Party wants to do that, more power to them. Because what I'm looking for is outcomes. I'm looking for an economy and an architecture to the economy and an architecture to our government's programs that creates the safety net that is necessary for Tom, Dick, and Mary so that they can live and be happy as the workers in Germany, Finland, Sweden, all across the world, Japan, all across the world are. We need to start creating that environment, and if the Republicans want to get on board, more power to them. I don't predict that. I don't predict that.
All right. That's the one and only Sandy Williams. So thank everybody who made the show go. We'll be back on. I'll be back on tomorrow. I'm going to listen to the presidential nominee this afternoon. I'll let you guys know how it went on tomorrow. Up next, Matt Nair on air, Jane Matt Nair, and Greg Bott. Thank you, Calvin. See you guys on tomorrow.